Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Gaza is back after going dark and being cut off from the world. Israel continues to deny Gaza everything needed to sustain modern life. In the meantime, the West collectively turns a blind eye to the collective punishment of Palestinians. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, Martin Jay in Marrakesh. He's an award-winning journalist and commentator. And in Budapest, we cross to George Samueli. He is a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Okay, let's go to Marrakesh. So much is happening. It's happening so fast as well. We had for about a day and a half, it appeared that, in fact, it did happen. Gaza went black. No outside contact. As we speak right now, their contact through the internet and other communications is being restored slowly at that. I suppose the biggest thing that's going on right now in my mind is how the collective West has decided to collectively turn its back on Palestinian suffering. And it's really just breathtaking because, you know, we all three and our viewers were very skeptical and mocked this whole idea of rules-based order. I guess we don't really have to mock it anymore because it's not applicable in any world, any universe right now. Go ahead, Martin.
Yeah, and it reminds us really sadly who is really in charge of these so-called institutions that could, you know, hold America or Israel to account, you know, the ICC in The Hague. It makes a huge mockery, I think, of them. And the UN, where is the UN? You know, how can the UN possibly hold its head high in this international environment and preach the moral tutelage to the rest of the world when, you know, it lets Israel do this? I mean, I would have thought the UN must do something with Israel. It must either suspend them or make some sort of statement, some sort of token gesture, you know. But, you know, America's calling the shots. And I'm very skeptical. I'm very, very skeptical about this internet and electricity blackout. You know, to me, that just smacks of not allowing social media content to be distributing, you know, ubiquitously of all the human rights.
Well, covering up war crimes. Covering up war crimes. Let me go to George here. Not only covering up war crimes, but it's something you and I have talked about ad nauseum, George, is that the Israeli, the IDF does not want the world to see how it fights, how it kills, and how maybe it is inept. As we were convening last week, Martin pointed out that in terms of infantry, Israel is not the best. It's shown itself to be quite weak here. And then we have, you know, going from topic to topic very quickly, an Israeli flag is being planted in the small part of the of Gaza here. It's some kind of symbolism here. But, you know, wanting to control the message by not allowing any conduit, that's quite interesting, isn't it, George?
Well, that's right. But nonetheless, it's already clear that the message coming out of Gaza is a quite shocking one. And now we've seen massive protests in some parts of Europe. We had a massive protest in London yesterday. We even had a massive protest in New York City. It's clear that Israel and its backer, chief backer, the United States, are in a kind of a global minority. Now, you know, what's really emerged really in the last 48 hours is there isn't going to be this massive invasion. I mean, Netanyahu more or less admitted that these incursions that we've been seeing, it's kind of all that we're going to get, that Israel just doesn't have the will to go in and you know, fight man to man, as we've discussed before, but instead it would just simply go on inflicting these casualties. Now, the way the United States has responded is quite shocking, and in ways that it has never responded, you know, in a similar way in the past. I mean, even, you know, some of the really worst atrocities that Israel had committed, such as the invasion of Lebanon in 1982. I mean, it's now outright persecuting organizations that express any sympathy for the Palestinians. So we have Governor Ron DeSantis boasting that he has just simply banned a student group, a pro-Palestinian student group. Now, what is the basis for that? Just simply pro-Palestinian. And then you have these Republican presidential candidates, including Trump, incidentally, who showed up at this Republican Jewish coalition, just simply blandly saying, well, anti-Semitism is the same as anti-Zionism. Anti-Semitism has no place in America. Therefore, we need to ban it. We need to ban any organization that is advocating on behalf of the Palestinians.
Well, it's really quite interesting. I'm glad you brought up the protests. And let's point out that the UK abstained at the United Nations, which shows absolute cowardice on their part. And it shows that they're terrified of their own people, okay? But what's really interesting to both of you, I'll direct this to Martin, is that there are a number of large Jewish groups all through Europe and the United States saying, Israel does not speak for me. Zionism isn't synonymous with being Jewish. So these people are pushing back because obviously they don't, not in my name is their message here. And that's pulling people out as well. But it shows, Martin, the isolation of so many governments in the West.
The isolation and also the limited time, I would say, how much longer this situation can carry on. Because unlike the Ukraine war, you have a huge contingent of people in London, for example. I mean, the estimations were 500,000 on the street. You know, it's going to be very difficult for the government and for call center journalists to keep on with this narrative when they are just surrounded by so many people on social media questioning it. So I think that puts a certain amount of pressure, that puts a certain amount of time limit on the operation. But where it goes from now, I mean, everyone's, you know, the big question now from all the analysts, from all the big guns is, where does this go? You know, where does it spread into a regional conflict? You know, and I'm beginning to worry. I said on your show last week that I was very concerned that Netanyahu was more than capable of creating a false flag attack between Hezbollah and Iran and America. I'm more worried now about Biden's position. He's cranked things up since we last spoke, and I'm really concerned now that the situation that we're looking at now is the possibility of America taking airstrikes on Hezbollah positions in the south of Lebanon. This is now very realistic. It's already going on between Israel and Hezbollah right now as we speak. It's happening. They're shelling on both sides, but it's contained. And I think there is an erroneous idea, I think, from Israel and America that if America came into the conflict and America bombed Hezbollah, that Iran and Hezbollah would take a different view and handle it very differently if it were Israel doing the same job. And I think that's a very, very dangerous road to go down because, I think those F-16s and F-15s, which are on the aircraft carrier, I think they'll be shot down. And then we enter a World War III scenario. And then what do we do? What does Biden do? You know, the problem with Biden is that, you know, a week ago we were saying, analysts were saying he's lost a Muslim vote in America, which I think he has completely. But I think
among Democrats, at least, he's down 11% among Democrats.
The question is, has he lost the Israeli vote as well in America? Because there's a lot of Israelis, as you point out now, you know, who don't agree with this. So I think he's isolating himself more and more. And he doesn't know where he's going. He doesn't know where this is taking
him. Well, Martin, I mean, I think it was in the summer, George, you have an encyclopedic mind, I'm sure you'll correct me, but Jake Sullivan, I think it was in Foreign Affairs or one of the major journals, you know, we have, I'm paraphrasing here, the Middle East now is quieter than it has been in decades. There's some nonsense. He's such a nitwit, okay? And it really does reinforce what Martin just said here. These people really don't know what they're doing, and they literally are playing with fire because the way the rhetoric is built up. The Palestinians are always the ones that are doing all the oppressing, apparently. It is so inverted, okay? And if you have aircraft carriers and you got planes, you're going to play out this narrative. George.
Yes, that's right. What's interesting about that Jake Sullivan, it's a 7,000-word piece, is that The print edition of Foreign Affairs has those remarks about, oh, things are really quiet, you know, we don't expect any problems with Israel and Gaza. But the online edition, they took all those words out because it would be so obviously embarrassing for
Stalin and his acolytes would be so proud, wouldn't they, George? Just airbrushing it away.
And of course, Sullivan himself has been the subject of numerous warning, obsequious profiles, likening him to, you know, Bismarck and Metternich, a great foreign policy thinker. But of course, this foreign policy thinker and this, you know, this great administration, you know, in which the adults are back in charge, is they've got themselves into, you know, a horrific confrontations that previous administrations had managed to avoid. They've got a very dangerous confrontation still in Ukraine. I mean, that's ongoing. That hasn't ended. And then they're getting themselves, as Martin says, into quite a dangerous situation in the Middle East. And I agree. I mean, that's certainly something that could happen. They've got these aircraft carrier groups and if something happens, whether it's a false flag attack or whether this fighting between Israel and Hezbollah intensified, there will be great pressure on the United States to get more directly involved. And I mean, there are plenty of politicians who are actually calling for the United States to get directly involved. You know,
but we might not have to wait that long because, Martin, I mean, considering the United Nations organizations that are in Gaza, which I have every reason to believe what they say to the world is true, is that this humanitarian, it's not impending, it's happening. It's happening as we're speaking right now. And I do look at the players, the actors like Hezbollah that will say, this is intolerable. We cannot allow this to happen. And Iran will also be in follow in suit in one form or another. So, I mean, there's so many things that are rushing to some breaking point. Go ahead, Martin.
What's particularly worrying is the role of the large Arab countries, the Arab leaders in the region, and how America and the UN have just completely ignored them. They don't equate, they don't feature in any of the narrative. Their opinions are not remotely interesting. You know, the Arab foreign ministers recently met and overwhelmingly voted for a ceasefire, and that was just completely ignored. That didn't even feature really in mainstream press. So, you know, you talk about Iran and you talk about Hezbollah being provoked possibly into upping the stakes in the region. I think the Israelis don't understand, and the Americans have underestimated the role that countries like Saudi Arabia and Qatar will play if this carries on in the way it goes.
They have themselves to blame as well, okay? I mean, what about an Arab Muslim voice? Well, you know, they talk a big game, but they haven't been on the side of the Palestinians. But now when they're the slaughter and impending genocide against them, they have no choice but to speak. Unfortunately, gentlemen, I have to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Gaza. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. This is the Home Edition. To remind you, we're discussing Palestine. Let's go back to George in Budapest. Another thing that's happening, we all watched the Israeli ambassador to the UN give his speech, and we see this global war on terrorism 2.0 being played out. So, we had Islamist groups, radical groups. So you can put all the monikers on you want. It's fine with me. We've heard it for what, almost 20 years. But now the Hamas are Nazis. Okay, now, you know, this is, you know, they're ISIS. Okay, they've never been described that way before. And what they're doing is they're creating, resurrecting a failed narrative, I would say, because the global war on terrorism was an utter failure. But that doesn't stop them trying to do it again. And in that way, it's a narrative that is more easily digestible and coherent. I mean, it's completely wrong, but it's coherent, George.
Oh, you're absolutely right, Peter, because what Israel has been very skillful in doing, you know, over the years is to suggest to its Americans' patrons that it's actually vital, absolutely essential to their interests. And so just as in the Cold War, they managed to fool the Americans in thinking that, you know, we're absolutely in the front line of the Cold War. You know, you got to rely on us. You know, we standing up to the Soviet expansionism. And so now they have to show, well, this is, we're fighting the global war on terror. And that immediately in American minds, you know, it turns a switch on. Oh, yeah, global war on terror. ISIS. Oh, yeah, they're the head choppers. You know, of course, you know, there is Israel right in the forefront of the battle against ISIS. America simply don't pay attention to the fact that you know, that the United States hasn't actually done anything at all about ISIS. It's actually fueled ISIS over the years. And in fact, same way Israel has cooperated with ISIS in Syria.
Yeah, it's very interesting. They want to use this narrative. Let me go back to Martin here. They want to use this narrative, but, you know, we had ISIS and 31 flavors of terror, Islamic terror in Syria. Israel never had anything to do about that. They never attacked them. As a matter of fact, interestingly enough, ISIS has never attacked Israel. Okay. So, I mean, if they want to put Hamas into that category, which is, again, is ahistorical and actually kind of illogical, but that is a narrative that Western publics will believe, which I think is really interesting is something that George has pointed out to me repeatedly, is that we all have watched over the last week or so all these huge, huge demonstrations in Western capitals. But where were those demonstrations for Ukraine? They never happened. Okay, go ahead, Martin.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about ISIS, this slur against Hamas, is that probably most people in the West don't know or don't realize, is that during the best part of the war in Syria, Israel did back ISIS. Israel backed a group called al-Nusra, which was an offshoot of ISIS, to fight the Assad regime. It provided with weapons, sometimes cash, and provided all the hospital support. So all of those Nusra fighters in the south of Syria used to travel across the border into Israel and get medical assistance. So that's one point. But I mean, muddying the water and using these buzzwords, you know, is a very clever technique of confusing people, because people in the West just don't really understand what it is. They see Muslims killing, and that's enough for them to go to the next stage in their bigotry and their racism, to kind of pigeonhole these people as, quote, savages, you know, or animals, this kind of language, which the Israelis, of course, love. That's what they want. They want the newspapers to be filled with that. But, you know, when we look, going back to George's point, I think we created this Hamas, though. I mean, it was a product of failed Israeli policy going back a long, you know, 20 years. I mean, Israel pulled out of the Strip when, in 2005. 2006, you had elections where Hamas won 44% of the vote. Because people were tired. They were tired of the failed peace process, you know, the Oslo Accords being nothing.
And Fatah and the PLO.
And Fatah and corruption and all that, you know. But the idea from Netanyahu in those early days was, now we need to starve Hamas. You know, let's put a siege around Gaza Strip and blockade so goods and services can't get in and out, and create this open prison, which in reality is not an open prison. It's an open concentration camp. That's a better way of putting it, actually, because in prisons, you at least get to leave, and you also get visiting rights, and you have access to lawyers and all sorts of things. You know, people in Gaza don't have that. But I think the failed policy now, we're beginning to see it, is that the idea of a Netanyahu of starving the Strip and hitting Hamas hasn't worked. It's backfired. So do we go from one failed policy, which had the American backing back in 2007, to another one now? It seems that we do, and there's no break on this. There's no safety catch. There's no, you know, because we're doing the same thing now that we're doing with Ukraine. We're allowing the elites to control the media, to control the narrative, and rush ahead into something which could have regional implications for years, possibly even decades.
Well, George, the Zionism is very apocalyptic. Okay, I mean, it cannot tolerate any resistance on Israel's borders. But it also, Zionism is all about a social pact within. And so there's a crisis within the country because, as you and I have noted before, Zionism should be accepted because it protects Jews It's a sanctuary. Israel's a sanctuary for Jews. Well, apparently that's not the case anymore. They're still going through the shock of what happened on October 7th. That's what makes the kind of fanatics that Netanyahu is and the people that he has surrounded himself with all the more dangerous, because if the Zionist project is going to fail, well, everybody's going to come down with us. It's about as ugly as that, George.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And again, it's very interesting because Israel, as far as the Western perceptions are concerned, has kind of played that part down. I mean, the picture it wants to present to the world is that, well, it's this small, plucky little country that is being set upon by these really terrible regimes and terrible fanatics, you know, all running around, you know, blowing things up. And they just want to drive the Jews to the sea. And of course, none of that is true. I mean, you know, in 67, they captured territories. Now, the way that it was sold in the West, oh, they have to capture territories because they need security, because otherwise, you know, they'll be insecure. They're going to be driven again to the sea. But of course, the territories they captured were the territories that was historic Palestine and that Israel laid claim to. And that was right from the beginning. They began building the settlements, you know, immediately. I mean, as soon as they won in June 67, they started the settlement building, because they always intended, right from the beginning, to incorporate that historic Palestine, the British mandated Palestine, as Greater Israel. And that way, so, but as far as, you know, the West, the way it was sold in the West, oh, they just need security because they needed this territory. Otherwise, you know, they can't possibly, you know, keep their land. And that's what they're doing. I mean, they're building settlements in a way to ensure that eventually all of this will be Greater Israel. And that's why, you know, for the West, they don't really, you know, say, I mean, even when you listen to someone like Alan Dershowitz, which is like, well, I love Israel, of course, I'm not in favor of the settlements, as if this is a minor issue, you know, like, oh, well, I mean, you know, we have differences here and there, you know, I mean, settlements, okay, well, you know, let's just, you know, we have disagreements there. But it's at the very core, it's at the very heart of what Israel is about, is what Israel has been doing. And that's not just Netanyahu. Again, people say, you know, I don't like Netanyahu. Well, Dershowitz doesn't say that, but some, you know, like Bernie Sanders, oh, I don't like Netanyahu. But it's been the settlements policy and the whole Greater Israel policy began under Labour. I mean, it was Labour, and they started this, and they're all on board for this.
You know, Martin, I don't know, when I heard the term two-state solution, shortly after October 7th, I really didn't know how to react, to laugh or to cry, because, I mean, after everything that's been said and done, and, you know, Madrid, Oslo, we could go on and on and on about it. And they talk about, you know, the need for a two-state solution. Well, the Israelis have never wanted that. This is the ultimate kicking the can down the road, and refiguring and reframing the debate and all of this. You know, we left Gaza. We left Gaza. We evacuated. Now, but they never talk about how they turned it into a concentration camp, as you've said here. So I don't see there's any political will that's paying lip service to a phrase that it lost meaning decades ago, Martin.
But that may well be the basis for the international community to scratch back a few remnants of credibility in this whole ghastly affair. You know, even Biden himself talked about, after Hamas is defeated, you know, we need to create a state for the people of Palestine. And, it's interesting that we're not seeing any bold statements or any big papers being written by the European Union, which is basically just a bystander, you know, standing on the touchline, not even shouting from the touchline, just, you know, watching all these events. This is the EU, this huge superpower we're led to believe, who has this foreign policy and, you know, has this hegemony around the world, you know, and blue flags and all these.
They maybe have a lot of assets, Martin, but they have no conscience apparently anymore. Okay, really pathetic. Go ahead.
But they go to their default position. When anything big happens, we stop talking, we stop having our meetings, we just follow the Americans and keep quiet, you know, and that's shameful, absolutely shameful. Because we're going to pay for this. We're going to pay for the ugliness, which hasn't yet arrived in Europe, the anti-Semitism, I'm sure, is going to arrive. You know, you can't expect those millions of Muslims from Arab countries that are in Belgium and the Netherlands and the UK and France to just sit by and watch people be victims of a Holocaust. And that's what's happening. Let's start using this word. It is a Holocaust. Make no mistake. That's what Netanyahu wants to do. I think George is actually bang on. I don't think there will be a ground invasion. I think it's too risky. You know, I mean, maybe Netanyahu liked that idea, but his advisors have said to him, are you prepared to lose tanks? Are
you prepared to George and Martin, particularly, I mean, it's interesting what they did on Friday for a day and a half by doing the blackout of communications. George, if they can do it once, they can do it anytime they want, okay? Turn off the cameras, turn off the lights, go and do your dirty work. 20 seconds, George, before we finish.
Yeah, no, that's it. That's exactly what they're doing, because they also know that essentially the United States has given them a blank check. And, you know, whatever you do, fine, that's okay. Because of, look what Hamas did. Hamas are the Nazis. And, of course, anything is justifiable against Nazis. And this is, again, always what... And that's really the two-state solution. Again, this is the rank hypocrisy among U.S. officials. They've been repeating this 30 years. They don't mean it, but it's a good thing to say. You know, like, you know, well, we support a two-state solution. We need a state for the Palestinians. We're not actually going to do anything about it. We're not even going to take even, you know, the first step towards achieving it. But we like to say it because it makes us feel good.
Makes
just
us
like
feel
humanitarian
good.
Pauses. You know, we like humanitarian pauses because it sounds good, the humanitarian.
I got to jump in here, gentlemen. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Marrakesh and in Budapest. And I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Rostock rules.